This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, August 8th. I'm Tom Rogers. Coming up, legal issues in the news, looks at tracking dogs in the law. First, a look at AM 580 News, though. The Blagojevich administration is tightening rules for hiring government interns and restricting employee transfers amid a federal probe of its hiring practices. A memo obtained by the Associated Press outlines intern program changes along with reminders about laws that insulate hiring from politics and give priority to military veterans. It also prohibits transferring employees to new locations unless they've been in their current positions at least 2 years. Governor Rod Blagojevich's top lawyer wrote the July 26th memo. It requires that interns be recent college graduates, that they go through the same politics-free interview as other employees, and that they work at least 12 months before becoming full-time. A spokeswoman says the memo merely reflects Blagojevich's continued efforts to improve the system. The first ever board for the new Southwest Champaign Mass Transit District could be named in September. That's the hope of Champaign County Board Chair Barb Wysocki, who says she's received applicants to the new MTD board from 5 people and interviewed 2 of them so far. The new MTD was formed by voters in Southwest Champaign who want to avoid annexation by the Champaign-Urbana MTD. But the CU MTD annexed Southwest Champaign anyway last year, and that action has been appealed in court. Wysocki says that if the Southwest Champaign MTD loses the battle, its board members who live in that territory would be in an unusual situation.
My understanding, and I have not asked that question of the state's attorney yet, is that these individuals would then be disqualified, and then I would have to fill those seats, which is why I'm moving rather slowly. I mean, in asking around, no one has been able to tell me how long the appeals process could take.
If it loses the land battle, the Southwest Champaign MTD's remaining territory would be a thinly populated rural area. Wysocki thinks such a loss would lead to the district being dissolved, although she says that would take another referendum. Application forms for the new Southwest Champaign MTD board are available at the Champaign County Board offices at the Brookins Center in Urbana. Patrick Thompson, who was convicted last month on sexual abuse and home invasion charges, may get another chance to clear his name. AM 580's Jim Meadows reports.
Thompson, a 37-year-old Champaign resident, was scheduled for sentencing yesterday. But instead, a Champaign County judge continued the case for another 8 weeks, while Thompson's new lawyer, Steve Kirshner, argues for dismissal of charges or a new trial. Kirshner says the prosecution brought up inappropriate material during Thompson's trial last month.
For example, in closing argument, the prosecution talks about a case in New York involving a murder. It has nothing to do with this case. There was no relevance. There was no point in bringing that to the jurors' attention. And there's a number of other similar concerns that we have about inappropriate material being put before the jury.
A jury found Thompson guilty of attacking an Urbana woman in her apartment 2 years ago and fondling her. Members of CU Citizens for Peace and Justice have been attending Thompson's court appearances. They claim he was framed as a way to block his civil lawsuit accusing city and county officials of trying to suppress his video documentary critical of local police. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
A lawsuit says a new state law requiring Illinois to sell about $1 billion worth of investments in companies doing business in Sudan is unconstitutional. The National Foreign Trade Council and other plaintiffs say by enacting the law, Illinois is attempting to conduct its own foreign affairs in violation of the Constitution. The plaintiffs say it'll also hurt the pension funds of police officers and firefighters by forcing them to divest their international mutual funds and invest instead in the bond market, where yields aren't nearly as high. The bill was passed last year to protest the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Sudan's Darfur region. The lawsuit was filed yesterday in federal court. The sudden closure of 3 Champaign-Urbana dry cleaning stores has customers wondering when or if they'll get their laundry back. 3 of the 4 Denny's Professional Cleaners and Launderers locations shut their doors late last week after the owner filed for bankruptcy protection. Orders for customers like Deborah Leckband are sitting inside those shuttered stores, and she was angry enough to call the local Chamber of Commerce asking what to do next.
It would have been considerate if they had actually declined to take those orders and made some attempt to let people know that there was this possibility and that, you know, and that we should pick up our clothes.
The chamber is referring calls to the state attorney general's Consumer Protection Division, which is collecting complaints. The owner, Denny Lincecum, hasn't been reached for comment. An assistant with the firm's court-appointed trustee, Steve Miller, says no decision has been made yet on when to reopen those stores to let people pick up clothes. The nation's power grid fared relatively well during the last widespread heat wave, but a University of Illinois professor says the grid is still prone to big problems. George Gross says almost all the nation's power outages over the past 2 weeks can be attributed to problems in distribution systems and not the massive network of high-voltage lines that bring the power to those smaller systems. But Gross says the companies that own those major lines haven't been keeping up with growing supply and demand.
Generation investments are going up and are going up markedly. Load is going up, and those generation investments are meant to keep track of the load, yet the transmission system is not keeping track of it. So it would be the same way as us putting up new factories, and then we don't have the railroad transportation system to take the output from those factories to the market.
Gross says the federal government should consider more incentives to prompt that investment in the power grid. He says it's easy for utilities to understand the potential profit of new generating facilities, but not when it comes to beefing up the transmission network. He says that may lead to even more congestion and less reliability in the near future. For the latest news online, go to will.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Tom Rogers. Tracking dogs may help solve crimes, but courts aren't always impressed with their abilities enough to allow the evidence in a courtroom. Commentator Amy Guida tracks the use of bloodhounds in criminal cases in this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News.
Hear the word bloodhound and you probably picture a dog with pendulous ears, the poetic description from a court long ago. Unless you're in law enforcement, then you picture a big dog nose to the ground on the trail of some criminal. First, a powerful nose. Second, those pendulous ears. And so it's been in law enforcement for a very long time. Since 1805, in fact, when, according to the American Kennel Club, a group of positive thinkers called the Thrapthan Association for the Prevention of Felons first used the bloodhound to search for poachers and thieves. Apparently, the first step in felon prevention was felon apprehension. One of the first cases involving bloodhounds is from Kentucky more than 100 years ago. Someone called out the dogs to investigate a barn arson. Just like in the movies, the bloodhound sniffed his way to a local tenement filled with people of bad repute, in the court's words. Authorities narrowed the list of suspects to one, arrested him, and brought him to trial. There, he argued that the bloodhound evidence should be inadmissible against him. Eventually, a court said no to the nose. It agreed that the testimony about this dog's sense skills was inadmissible. No one had testified that this particular dog was in fact a bloodhound, a breed known for its nose. Plus, no one had testified that this particular dog had been trained to track. Reading between the lines, given the right dog and the right circumstances, the court found that evidence of a trail would be appropriate at trial, just not in the barn arson case. A strong dissent argued that no dog should ever be allowed to testify against a human being. It reminded the majority that bloodhounds had been used to capture slaves and jeopardized liberty in years past. The danger of a mistake was too great, the dissent wrote, because the dog might pick up on the scent of an innocent. But that dissenting voice did little to stop the will of that Kentucky majority, and soon a majority of states began to accept such evidence. Not Illinois, however. In 1914, the Illinois Supreme Court wrote that the fruit of a bloodhound's abilities should never be allowed in Illinois courtrooms. And so it stands today. As recently as 2001, a court reiterated that in Illinois, bloodhound evidence should not be admitted as proof of any fact at trial. But there's now, to quote one author, an overwhelming number of jurisdictions that allow bloodhound evidence. States like California, where a court a few years back upheld a man's conviction for attempted murder. The evidence against him included testimony that a dog alerted on his fear scent as he escaped from police. The opinion notes that some dogs can be trained to smell fear. This one did, and followed it to the defendant's apartment. So you can't necessarily assume that a court will accept the evidence should detectives use bloodhounds to solve a crime. It all depends on which way, in that particular jurisdiction, the pendulum regarding those pendulous ears swings. I'm Amy Guida.
Amy Guida is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois. AM580's meteorologist Ed Kieser says we should see some sunshine over much of the two states, but not in southern Illinois and Indiana, mostly cloudy there, scattered showers and thunderstorms, as well as west central Illinois, seeing some rain there today. In the north, though, partly to mostly sunny, and in east central Illinois and in central Indiana, partly sunny. The highs today ranging from 77 near Lake Michigan to 92 in far southern Illinois. Tonight in west central Illinois and in the south, mostly cloudy, scattered showers and thunderstorms. In northern and east central Illinois, becoming mostly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms arriving overnight. And in northern and central Indiana, still partly cloudy, no rain. The lows from 58 in northeast Indiana to around 70 in the far south. For tomorrow, in Illinois and in southwest Indiana, mostly cloudy, scattered showers and thunderstorms. Elsewhere in Indiana, a mix of clouds and sun, and highs tomorrow ranging from near 80 in northeast Illinois and northern Indiana to 92 in far southern Illinois. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, August 8th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, and other helpful information at our website, will.uiuc.edu. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.